Hi, and welcome to Shannon's Corner. I am Shannon Devereaux Sanford, and thank you so much for joining us here today on your favorite radio station, WTBQ. And don't forget, we are now 93.5 FM, as well as our very faithful 1110 AM. And I hope you're doing well today. The kids are back in school or soon to be going back in school, and certainly that's a good time of year. And, you know, a lot of us, well, my daughter just went to college for the first time. She's a freshman, and guess how I communicate with her? Well, texting. I mean, it's such a wonderful thing to be able to text and constantly say good morning and how are you? And, you know, all of our technology is really terrific. It has done us wonders in many ways, and it's also, there's another side to that coin. It has done some really negative things to us, and I think that as parents, we really need to keep an eye on this. I know that my daughter is 17 and will be 18, just was living through that sexting period where we didn't know what it was until it came upon us when she was about 12 or 13. And everybody seemed to be shocked when this was happening. Now we're aware of it, but I often wonder what the next thing is going to be. And that's a question that I want to ask my guest today, Catherine Steiner Adair. She is going to join us, and she has written a wonderful book, The Big Disconnect, Protecting Childhood and Family Relationships in the Digital Age. Dr. Adair is a clinical psychologist, school consultant, and she is affiliated with Harvard Medical School. She has appeared on the Today Show, Good Morning America, the Discovery Channel, CNN, PBS, been quoted in the New York Times and many other places. And I want to welcome Dr. Catherine Steiner Adair to Shannon's Corner. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. And this is a very intense book. I mean, intense in the way it's very friendly and easy to read, but you really have a lot of information in here, and you really have an important message. And my first thought before I picked up the book was, I thought, I hear often so many people say, oh, I hate texting, or I hate this. I don't know why kids don't communicate just like we did through the phone. And I think, texting's not so bad. It's a great form of communication. They have to think before they say something, meaning they have to write it. We all communicate in different ways. Communication is communication. I think all communication's wonderful. And then I started to read your book, and I see your point, is that we really have to be vigilant about communication because there's a lot of pitfalls. Is that who you wrote it for us to know the pitfalls? Because you clearly say in the book that you use communication of all sorts, you know, texting and computer, as all of us do. What are the basic pitfalls for a family?
Well, you're absolutely right. I use technology, and I love technology when it's used well. And what I intended to do and hope to do is sort of encourage us all to sort of pull over, hit reboot or refresh, and really rethink how we are communicating both online and offline. You know, one of the things you talked about with your daughter going off to college, having been there myself, I can say texting is great. Mm-hmm. I love to know plane landed, I'm fine. You know, all those transactions are wonderful. But when I start to hear things from teens and young adults who say things like, oh, I would never call anybody on the phone and talk to them anymore, that's way too intense.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started to get concerned. What does it mean when we use only text, only the printed word, to talk about things that are very important to us? And it is our capacity to hear and empathize with each other's tone of voice that is so essential in human relationships when they're going well and when they're going not so well. And certainly as a therapist, I have seen ways in which technology and texting can accelerate drama rather than facilitate a healthy resolution of arguing or upset.
I hear what you're saying, and I'm going to play devil's advocate here, because I also think that when you're texting, you have to think about what you're going to say. You know, when you're talking on the phone and you're angry and you call somebody a name or you know, say something you wish you didn't, you can't take it back. When you're texting, and I know that my daughter's gone through this when she's had a fight with her boyfriend, I said, think about what you need to say. And if she's texting it, she can write it, think about it. I say, put it away for an hour, or make sure this is really what you want to say. I think that there's some sort of real nice cushion there, and something that we really need to define our words. I think the children have better, or certainly teenagers, I think, have a better vocabulary. They use words better. They think about what they're going to say. I think that is the plus with texting. Now, the downside is, as you're pointing out very clearly in your book, the social connection. We need that social connection. But is there the plus that I see in texting, or am I all wrong?
No, I think you're right. In certain circumstances, it's a great thing because basically we want people to think before you speak. And when texting is used well to buy some time, that's always fine for the person who's buying the time. But if you're on the other end waiting for the text to come back, and it doesn't come back, and it doesn't come back, and, you know, that could be very anxiety-provoking and actually make things worse. I think the other, you know, the other downside of texting is that often there's something about the magnetic urge or the siren call of the screen, if you will, that leads people to do just the opposite, not think before they text. It's a very OMG, highly reactive medium for a lot of people. So fights escalate and can get much worse in texting.
Well, that's
because
true.
People will say monosyllabic words or, you know, drop some language that you might not be as likely to say if you were face-to-face with somebody. And, you know, 500 texts in 20 minutes in a fight, very typical, not unusual.
Yeah, not for most people over 40, but for certainly the younger generation, boy, those thumbs move very fast.
It is amazing.
It is truly amazing. If you have a teenager, you know exactly what I'm talking about, and they just constantly do this.
My daughter can text with just her thumbs without looking at her phone. It's
absolutely
really impressive.
Yeah, I know. I've caught her under the dinner table where there's not allowed to have and I see the little thumbs going under there as she's talking right to her father or something. I mean, they're amazingly good at that. So that's certainly the negative side of that. And, you know, the big negative to me, and I'd like to address this about all of this, especially Facebook, all this computer, the digital age with the children, is when we left school at 3 o'clock years ago, we left school. So if there was an issue going on, we left it there. We came back the next morning. Most people had forgotten about it. Now it lives on and it lives on and it lives on. And it's really horrible if you have done something bad and everybody knows it and it goes viral. I often tell my daughter, do not talk bad about people like that. I mean, how would you feel if you were on the end of that? I understand the feeling of committing suicide when you think everybody knows the dumb thing you did. That is, to me, the worst thing about this. How can we teach our kids not to do this? And is there a time where all of this is way too young for them? I mean, they're doing this in elementary school. Should parents not allow them on Facebook and those kind of things until they're a certain age?
Oh, you ask so many great questions. Well, first of all, there is a ruling, and hopefully it will last, although I'm not too optimistic, that you have to be 13 to get on Facebook.
Mm.
And I, you know, absolutely wait till your kids are 13 to get on Facebook. And when you break a rule like that and you get your child a Facebook account or allow them to do it at 11 or 12, think about what the message is that you're giving your child. You can't stand not to have what everybody else has. You're succumbing to peer pressure. You're saying it's okay to break a law or to break, you know, a code of understanding, that somehow you're special. You don't have to play by the rules. That's pretty dangerous messaging from parents to begin with. And Facebook, as we all know, you know, can be a very cruel place.
There's
many online sites. Ask FM. We've recently seen a spate of suicides related to kids' participation on Ask FM, and those sites just play to the vulnerability of kids who want validation. They want to know, what do other people think of me? We all want to know that, and certainly when we're teenagers, we struggle with it every day. What am I going to wear today? What will people think, etc.? And the problem with, of course, asking people online is that people can be far more cruel online and more edgy online, and they don't have to see the impact of what they say. So to type, "Oh, you are fat and ugly, give up, why are you even asking? Go kill yourself now."
Oh, God. And they do that.
That kind of stuff is pretty...
It's pretty cruel. And the worst part of it is it stays there. It goes on. The next person, you know,
forwards it
to the other person or says, oh, you got to look at this. And before you know it, the kid walks in the school next day and everybody's pointing at them. Maybe you're people who don't know them. And that's just horrific. To me, that's just my worst nightmare.
It is a nightmare.
For,
you know, I remember this one 8-year-old girl I was interviewing, and she had gotten an email from a girl in her class who wrote, you know, the letter U, the letter R, not our friend anymore.
No.
And she couldn't sleep for nights because she couldn't erase the image from her mind. And, you know, we say to children, let it go, you know, let's keep new day, new start. Well, it doesn't go away.
Mm-mm.
And she said, you know, even if I erase it from my computer, How do I know they erased it? How do I know people won't be laughing at me next year in fourth grade?
Yeah. No, it's true. It's a brutal element to have in school. I think it's really unfair, and I don't think we're going to get away from it. So we have to teach children how to behave better. We have to teach them the consequences, and we have to teach them empathy. Because without empathy, they'll never understand that what they can do to someone else could be them. So and how it hurts someone else. And, you know, this is what I mentioned earlier. I remember when my daughter was about 12 or 13. This is before sexting was known, and we caught a friend of hers. My daughter told me, you know, this friend sent this picture inappropriate to some guy and she didn't know how to handle it. So the kids were, I think, 12. So I told the mother, this is before the word sexting came. It's just when we had gotten all these camera phones, and we were just all astounded. And then, of course, later on, we heard about it and everybody was talking about it. Now the kids know what not to do, but they didn't know. So when a boy said, do this, they didn't know the parameters. What is next on this sort of thing? I mean, where do we go with this, and how do we, you know, predict the bad things that are going to happen before they happen? I mean, suicides, this is part of the problem on this. So I think what you're saying so clearly in this book, that there's too much, too fast, too soon, which I know you talk about in your book, what do we as parents need to do?
Well, I think parents and schools both need to, first of all, set limits as much as you can. If your children are small enough that you can pick them up and carry them, as my friend Liz Perley, who started Common Sense Media, said, then you're old enough to really be able to be in control of where they go and what they have access to. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is that we have to really teach kids as core curriculum in schools now social and emotional intelligence, which is about teaching about empathy, teaching them to manage impulsivity, teaching them to calm themselves down before they push send and regret sending something that's, you know, illegal or so harmful to people. So, you know, kids don't need parents in the same way that they used to. Tell me what this vocabulary word means. They don't need teachers in the same way they used to be a source of, you know, primary source for content to learn. You can learn so much on the internet. It's amazing. But what we do need parents to do, and what we do need our teachers to do now more than ever, is teach us and teach our children the ways we relate to each other as human beings. Mm-hmm. What's fair? What's kind? What's respectful? What's harmful? What's dangerous? You know, what's gender bashing? You know, what's hateful? And really, at a much younger age, give them the sense and the opportunities to take charge of who they want to be online and what kind of person they want to be online. Yeah. So many kids talk about being one person at home online and a completely different person in school, and that disconnect can be a dangerous one.
How much are schools and teachers, not responsible is a bad word, but how much should they intervene in this? Because as we all know, I mean, you know, parents are very busy. They're out there working. They're doing all sorts of things. School is a great front line, but a lot of parents don't put restrictions in their home so that the kids don't have any. How much responsibility or how much is up to the school, and how much should the school get involved and set rules? Is that fair? Are we allowed to do that? Are schools allowed to do that by saying, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't? I mean, can we do that as a society? Can schools come in and set limits for the children?
Well, it really depends on whether you're a public school or a private school. Mm. But a lot of my work in schools that I'm in around the country is really helping schools develop core curriculum that every child has in every grade, so it's not dependent on one teacher or another teacher, where they're learning digital citizenship, where they're learning about the wonderful uses of technology and the very dangerous uses of technology, where they're signing home, school, parent contracts about responsible use. So now that schools and families are more connected than ever, I mean, homework assignments are up for parents, grades are up for parents, there's all sorts of ways in which technology is linked home and school. Let's use those links to also broaden our definition of what we mean by school and community and get parents and teachers working together, creating the same kinds of policies around what's safe use, acceptable use, and let's make sure that there are educational and helpful consequences when kids get in trouble, because a lot of good kids are getting into a fair amount of bad trouble.
Yeah, and a lot of them, they do it before they realize how good they really are, and, you know, so they go down that path. And I think boundaries are something that we need to really talk about. We are talking with Dr. Catherine Steiner Adair and her new book, The Big Disconnect, and we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a few on WTVQ. Hi, and welcome back to Shannon's Corner. I am Shannon Devereaux Sanford, and thanks so much for joining us today. And don't go anywhere, especially if you're a parent and you have children in school, because you really need to hear my guest today and what she has and get her new book, The Big Disconnect, Protecting Childhood and Family Relationships in the Digital Age. Dr. Catherine Steiner-Adair has written this book with parents and schools and certainly the students in mind. And we're all involved in the technical age. There's no question. There's just no way around it. And it can be wonderful. We can keep in touch with our children a lot easier. We can find out things. We can do homework. We can learn a lot, certainly, by having the computer, having text, having, you know, everything in our hands all the time. But there's that downside. The downside that we know about, which we were talking, if you just joined us, we were talking about the downsides of technology and how parents need to be aware of the downsides and how we don't need to put our kids too soon in this, which is really part of what you're talking about, Dr. Adair, in this book of putting our children in this kind of, you know, bad place, in this very negative spot too soon before they know what they're doing, that we need to teach them boundaries so they don't jump in and then get so overwhelmed and drowning in what's going on in technology. Is there, I mean, you know, with babies now, we start very early and we put things on screens for them. 3 months old have little computers. Do you think that's a great idea?
I think it's a very bad idea, and all the research certainly supports what the American Pediatric Association recommends, and that is absolutely no screens of any kind. TV, your smartphone, an iPad, anything, until a child is at least two, and you know, try and keep it to a half hour to an hour, and highly educational between the ages of 3 and 5. Not only are screens not appropriate for children, they can be harmful to babies. The baby brain is a brilliant little brain all by itself, and everything it needs to learn from life, it needs from human interaction, and technology cannot replace the kind of human interaction that infants need.
So that's very interesting. So up until the age of two, no screens. And even after that, you want screens that are just educational. So, you know, you don't want them watching. I mean, look, every parent has plopped their child in front of the television, and the television has become a babysitter. There's no question. And, you know, it's PBS, really nice shows, and so you feel really good about it. But does that go too far? I mean, is there a problem there? Do children get addicted to television?
Oh, we know that kids can get addicted to television. Kids can get addicted to smartphones or computer games. There's no question about it. But, you know, you're the parent, and you can choose what the content is. And as you said, I mean, Mr. Rogers is still tried and true, great stuff. Sesame Street, Blue's Clues. There's a wonderful organization called Common Sense Media, and it's a website online full of great advice to parents about what's developmentally appropriate for your child at each stage in their development. I sit on the educational advisory board of that organization. It's a wonderful service that's provided for parents.
So you can look at that and then decide what you need to go from there. But, I mean, it's very, very hard as children get a little older. Yes, under five, we can control that. As you mentioned, if we can still carry them, we can control them. But as they get a little bit older, we don't have that much control. And, you know, then they're always I have a family member who the child is about 8 and always has a cell phone with her, is always texting, doesn't have any interaction with the parents. And I look at this and I think this is a train wreck waiting to happen. These are very busy parents that have kind of said, well, okay, she's amused, she's busy, but this is really, and no kid's going to say that. No kid's going to say, I'm drowning here, I'm in trouble here. How do we set those boundaries when they're 8 or 13?
I think that parents have to really hit reboot and refresh and really rethink how they are letting technology play such a big role in their child's lives, because developmentally, that's not what kids need. And yes, it's an easy babysitter, and yes, it can quiet a child who's having a meltdown in a line, but it's not the right way to quiet your child down or to preoccupy your kids when they need to be doing a whole lot of growing and self-education and playing during the first 10 years of life.
If you see your child being a bully on this sort of thing, do you go to the school? Do you go to your child? Do you go? I mean, how do you fix this before it becomes bad? I mean, if you get little indications that because of the, you know, with texting or within the computer or whatever sites they're on, and they're starting to bully a little bit because they can, do we go to the child or do we go to the school? I mean, how does a parent handle that before it becomes a problem?
Well, I think, first of all, you start with your child and ask him what's going on. Why did you do this? Did something happen? And you really try and understand their experience of the situation. But, you know, it's not until kids are about 11 that they can do on average, that they can really do a good job of describing the other person's experience. So you have to realize you only have half the story. And I think, you know, it's very important to try and get as much of information as you can about what's going on, because your child might be being bullied or be caught up in a dynamic that they don't like, but they're trying to save face or they don't know how to get out of it. In general, I think it's very good to work with schools and with teachers and try and use these early missteps kids make as what we call teachable moments. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the times where you want to calmly and in a very reasonable way help a child correct their course and learn from the experience.
I think sometimes when a parent is always the one doing the disciplining, the children just kind of roll their eyes and go, I'm not really going to pay attention to you. But I think if it comes from someplace else, and certainly when they're young enough, under 14, where they're still listening, you know, wholeheartedly to authority, and hopefully later as well. But you know what I mean by that? I mean, certainly they're much more in tune to authority. And if they hear it from someone else and saying, you know, this is not a good thing, they might listen a little more. And certainly we don't want them to be on the other side of that as well. What is a sustainable family?
Well, what I try to set forth and really understand are what are the core concepts or practices that families can use and should maybe think about in the digital age that will really promote family closeness.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first one is that, you know, you've got to realize that technology is pervasive in today's world, and you and your family need to develop a family philosophy about using it that reflects and supports your family values and your own well-being. And that includes how you are as a family online and how you are when you're offline. And be very clear about expectations. For example, most parents think that when they give a child a phone, they give the child a phone. It would mm-hmm. be like sort of giving your kids keys to a car and say, okay, now you can go wherever you want to go, do whatever you want. But, you know, this phone, it's not really a gift, and it's not really theirs. I'm giving you this phone to use with the understanding that I expect you to use it in the ways we've discussed. If you take it to school, you follow school rules, no exceptions. Don't use the phone to initiate or forward mean stuff or sexy stuff, no porn, no illicit anything, no going on the World Wide Web except the sites we've identified you can.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything happens to the phone, if you lose it or you break it, you're responsible for replacing it. I mean, common sense stuff like that that just clarifies what our values are, what it's for, and what it's not for.
Yeah.
Another important thing for families, and really kids spoke about this so much, kids of all ages, talked about the need for families to play and to play together. And they complained enormously about how disappointed and sad or hurt or mad or hopeless they would feel when there was a family plan to, you know, go for a walk or mm-hmm. play at the beach, and the parents brought a screen along with them or weren't really there or didn't show up. You know, things like, kids would say, I miss the old days when we would go skiing and my dad couldn't text the office when we were on the ski lift.
You bring up a really important point here, is that parents need to be the role model. And if parents are always, when I was teaching my daughter to drive, and actually even before that, because I was very well aware of it, I never use my phone in the car unless I'm pulled over or I'm in a parking lot or something. But if it rings when I'm driving, I don't pick it up, even if I can. Especially when I was teaching my daughter to drive, I put it in the back seat. It's important that you model the behavior you want them to do. So if you're out on a family outing, don't bring your phone or don't bring the computer or don't say we're not going to have game night because I want to surf the web. I mean, you need to have those family times without technology being involved, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, kids will say things like, you know, I know my parents say they love me, but it's so weird because, like, they text and they drive at the same time, and
yeah.
they learn in school that that's so dangerous. So, like, I don't get it. Like, why would anything be more important than their child's life to them?
Absolutely. I tell that to my daughter all the time. I would never do it. I never speed. I never do anything like that because you are more important. But you're absolutely right. I can't tell you how many parents I know that I've been in the car with that still do it because, well, I got to call work. I got to take this phone call. But you should never do it. Well, you can't do that. You got to, you know, show that behavior exactly as you want them to do. You can't just tell them. I mean, certainly that's an old thing. We know that. But you're so right. When kids want that time with parents, it's very, very important to them. And if you keep pushing it off and pushing it off, they're going to be gone. You know, it's like that old song, you know, that, you know, you became like your parent. I mean, eventually you're not going to have that child around. What is the age? I know that I often think if you don't get a child before a certain age, I mean, by the time a child is 14 or 15, you can't be changing the rules then, right? There's that very early teenage years of window of opportunity to change things that could go bad. Is there a certain time as a psychologist that you think that you need to do that before?
Well, as a psychologist and a therapist and a family therapist, I think you can change behaviors at any age of stage in life. So I actually think it's never too late to pull over and change how you function, change how you are, change your family rules. I've helped parents put in completely different set of rules in their family. And, of course, everybody moans and screams and fights and cries at the beginning, but wait 6 months and then see how you feel about it. So I would say it's never too late to make changes. And I would also say that slow and steady wins this race.
That's an important point.
Roll out technology slowly. Really think, what kind of phone does my 10-year-old need? Do they really need a smartphone?
No.
I am astonished.
Yes, me too.
By how many parents give their kids smartphones with absolutely no restrictions on them.
Yeah.
And think that this is a tool that will keep them safe.
Yeah, no, it won't keep them safe. I mean, my daughter was astounded. I mean, I would not give her a phone until a certain age, and then it was only the kind that she could call me and I could call her, and there was nothing smart about it. It was just, you know, you call me.
That was the smart thing about it, but it had appropriate restrictions
and,
on it.
But now she says she looks at kids that are younger and go, how could their parents let them do that? And I thought, oh, good, I was really right. Because she looks at it and goes, no, they're too young to have that. Because she sees all the pitfalls in it and all the trouble that can be in it and all the, you know, all the issues that happen that at that age they don't see. So, I mean, there's no question we always have to be the parent. You say that a sustainable family is a family that has created a fabric of connectivity that is strong and many layered. And I think that is such an important point, that you have to have a strong family structure. And that is the core of everything with raising children. And certainly that's the core of everything in technology. Technology comes second, family comes first, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, what kids will say is they feel like they just don't matter sometimes when their parents pick up a call or take a call or say, it's like, oh, I can't wait to see you, honey, when you get home from college. And they pick them up at the airport, they get in the car, and the first thing they do is they take another call.
Yeah, that's true. And kids really pick up on that. And after a while, they just roll their eyes and they don't even want to talk to the parents. I know many kids like that. They just go, oh, I don't even want to deal with them. They never dealt with me. And I don't want, you know, I'm always second in their life. And then the kids walk away. And then the parents go, what did I do wrong? But they did it for years. So this is a wake-up call. This is a great book for every family, for every parent. It's a wonderful gift. It's a wonderful gift to yourself. The Big Disconnect, Protecting Childhood and Family Relationships in the Digital Age. Catherine Steiner-Adair, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your book. It's terrific.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Everybody, it's on Shannon's Corner. You can go there and see the book and definitely go get a copy for everyone. If you're a grandparent, get it for your kids so that they can raise their grandchildren in this age of technology in a really family way. Again, Catherine Steiner-Adair, thank you for joining us. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. And until next time, don't forget to make good choices.